You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM, Los Angeles. The time now is 6 p.m.
From the icy cold curves of Angeles Crest to the sunny shores of PCH and beyond on kpfk.org, this is The Car Show, broadcasting this week and every week from KPFK Los Angeles, 90.7 FM. I am your humble host, Mark Vaughn of AutoWeek.com. All I ask is that you go to AutoWeek.com and put nice comments after all my articles. Thanks. That's not asking too much. I am joined this week and every week by my favorite co-host in the world, a practicing attorney specializing in automotive law, a member of the Motor Press Guild, and the owner of not one, but two Mazdas, a Miata, and an RX-8, Michelle Spencer. Welcome, Michelle.
Hey, Mark. Good to be here again with you to talk about cars and events and all kinds of fun things going on in the car world.
And this week, we are lucky to have with us two very special guests. We will get to them in, what is this? Would that be alphabetical order? I don't know. Somebody who's better at English than me will have to make that decision. But we are going to start. We dive in, first of all, to our calendar section, upcoming events. And one of our favorite guys in the world, practically everybody's favorite guy in the world, his enthusiasm makes Southern California its car scene what it is today. I just saw him last weekend at a great Italian car show at the Peterson that we will be talking about later. He is everywhere, and right now he is talking to us from the East Coast at yet another very special car collection. Welcome, Bruce Meyer. Welcome, Bruce, to the car show.
It is a delight to be with you, Michelle, and Mr. Vaughn. You know, you're everywhere, and I love your articles, and you've been so generous with your publicity to the Peterson. It's really most appreciated. You're a special guy.
Hey, I am just using you guys. I need something to write about, and you guys make all kinds of cool things to write about. So I am like that little tick that bird on top of the rhinoceros that eats the ticks. I'm the bird, and I don't know. Okay, I'm running out of analogies. But Bruce, we didn't come here for that. We came here for you to tell us a little bit about the fantastic Father's Day happening there on Rodeo Drive in Beverly Hills. What's the official name of that event?
Well, it's the Concours d'Elegance on Rodeo Drive. It happens every Father's Day, so it will be next Sunday, June 15th. And it is probably one of the best car shows in the country. And the best part about it is free.
Like your mattress is free. I love that guy. Tell us, how many years has this been going on? Because this is an anniversary of sorts this year, I believe, right?
Yes. So we started it 30 years ago. It was a fellow named Andy Cohen, Winston Millett, and
it's okay, it won't be on the test. And some and another guy.
Or four guys. Jimmy Duffy. It was Jimmy Duffy, Andy, and Winston, and myself. We started it 30 years ago to raise money to restore Beverly Hills' antique fire truck, because they didn't have the money to restore it. So we put on this car show. This is our 30th year. Sadly, those other three wonderful gentlemen have passed away. So I guess for the last probably, you know, dozen years, I've been doing it myself, but with a lot of help with the Rodeo Drive, the city council, Tom Kenny, and anybody that, you know, has, you know, stepped up to help. So it's a big effort, and it's worth it. We will have, I don't want to scare everybody away, but it will have tens of thousands of people on Rodeo Drive. And
it is always a great show, and it gets a little crowded, but you know, it's worth it. It's worth it to elbow your way through the crowds to see the cool cars. Can you tell us some of the great cars you have planned for the show?
Yes. We have the Countach. That was the pace car at Monaco in 1988. It is a beautiful white Countach with a light bar. It looks like a highway patrol car. We will have Warner Brothers, Jack Warner's Mercedes, which is arguably the most beautiful Mercedes in the world. We will have that there as well. We're going to have a pink Cadillac, a pink Lincoln, 1964 Lincoln, a pink one. We have low riders. We have the zingers. We have the hypercars, supercars, a great selection of Ferraris, Porsches. It's something for everybody.
It always is. So what's now, I know that in that one intersection right in the middle of Rodeo Drive, there's always a circle of particularly cool cars. Can you tell us what you have planned for that?
Well, we have obviously the Warner Brothers car.
Right.
And we haven't really put that circle together yet.
Okay. Well, you have a little bit of time, right?
But obviously Jay Leno, you know, usually comes around midday. We have Beverly Hills Police Department. Won the motorcycle riding championship. It's a slow course, but it's Officer Gutierrez, our motor officer, will be giving a demonstration on just amazing talent on motorcycles. We'll have that about noon. We have our award ceremony at noon. Ferrari of Beverly Hills has a beautiful display of all the latest Ferraris. The Auto Vault will bring up some very special cars. We'll have Miras, all the great Lamborghinis. O'Gara is bringing a wonderful selection of Aston Martins. Then also RM Auctions is bringing a few of their cars that they will have scheduled for Monterey this year. It is always eclectic. There, I guarantee you, your radio audience will find something that appeals to them that day. Guaranteed.
Okay, that is great. It is always a good time, as we said, and is put on, not exclusively and not solely, but Bruce Meyer is the one there, and you will see him smiling up and down the street, making everybody feel welcome. Bruce, can you tell us, before we let you go, just quickly, where do people park? Because people just assume, oh, Rodeo Drive, it's got to be $100 an hour to park there. Do they park?
You can park in the residential areas, you know, the streets, Rodeo, Beverly Drive, Cannon Drive. They're all, you know, free. The city has parking structures that are free. There's really not a problem. I mean, you may have to walk a little ways, a block, but there will be parking and people coming and going all day. The show is from 10 in the morning until 4 p.m. People start coming earlier, but then they leave early. So there'll be always turnover. I've never heard anybody complain about not being able to find a parking place.
That's reassuring to know.
And we have food trucks. The event will raise money to restore the fire department's an old ambulance and also the police foundation. So it benefits police and fire. It very much a city event. And, it's going to be very special.
All right. Well, that's going to be Sunday, June 15th on Rodeo Drive in Beverly Hills with plenty of parking, lots of beautiful cars. And you might even, if you're lucky, you might meet Bruce Meyer when you're there. So, Bruce, thank you so much for this and for all you do for the collector car community. You are, as you say to everybody, you are the best.
No, you are the best, Mark.
No, you.
Okay, guys.
All right. Thank you, Bruce. And we're going to cut you loose now and enjoy the rest of your time wherever it is that you are.
Thank you.
All righty. Bye.
Bye-bye.
And with that, we will move right along on our calendar here. And in fact, if I can get a hold of just one more guy, I can't reach him. Carl, I know you're there, but I can't quite reach you. So I'll work on that in a little bit. But for the moment right now, we have another cool guy. He was, I believe, got his start in advertising. He will correct me if I'm wrong about that. Actually, he got his start working at Meguiar's selling a surface protectant stuff. I don't know. Don't call it
answering phones. No, I was
answering phones. Yeah.
I dropped out of college to go answer phones at Meguiar's. Okay. And that was my first foray into the car world. And that's how I got bit with the car bug.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen. what we're going to do is give you right now, introduce you to BJ Burtwell, who is the founder and is still running a very successful tour called Electrify Expo that is coming to the Los Angeles area. BJ, welcome to the car show.
Thanks, Mark. Good to see you again. Hi, Michelle. Good to see you.
Hi. Yeah, we're glad that you're here. I'm actually a veteran of those shows. The first one that was held here in Irvine, where I live, I attended. And then the second, and I think the third one in Long Beach. And now you've moved up to another location.
Yeah, you're in a new spot this year, BJ. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we outgrew the Long Beach Convention Center, and we have moved over about 15 minutes north to the Port of L.A. So we're taking about 1.5 million square feet over there at the Port of L.A. and producing the largest EV festival that will hit North America this year. And that will happen June 21st and 22nd. So we're really excited about it. There's a lot going on at that event, and it's really something to see.
Yeah. I grew up in San Pedro, and in fact, I'm a Pedro High graduate, which despite that, I still have a job. How did you, I'm thinking of that spot. It's down there at the end of Minor Street, right? And where are people going to park? Where is everything going to be laid out? Could you give us a lay of the land there?
Yeah, we have four lots off of Minor and 22nd, where we have about 2,000 parking spots for people to go ahead and flow into throughout the course of the weekend. And then we basically take over the port property from 22nd and Minor all the way down to the end of the waterfront location. So we have that entire area programmed with, you know, electric cars, electric trucks, electric bikes, scooters, skateboards, EV charging, hypercars, supercars, all types of demo experiences and thrill zones and kid zones. I mean, it's just, it's really grown into something. Michelle, you bring up the first event that we ever did in Irvine in a grass field.
Yeah.
And now 26 festivals later, we're here in the LA area at the Port of LA. So we're looking forward to this event for sure.
Yeah. And I know you've added over the years, you've added on and added on. There was test drives added on in the second year. Then there were all kinds of exhibits that were added. I know I saw electric race cars. I think I even saw electric lawnmowers and lawn equipment. I'm just kidding. but it just seems like every year expanded and more merch for people to explore.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty big festival now. And, it, you know, we really encompass not just electric cars and trucks, but the whole EV ecosystem. In fact, we'll have, if you guys are familiar with eVTOL or electric vertical takeoff and landing vehicles. So we'll have they're basically like flying cars. And we'll have those there. They're obviously powered by electric motors. We have some amazing, really cool hypercars and supercars there. And then obviously all the auto manufacturers are there. So I believe we have around 15 auto manufacturers. You know, really we've in just 4 years, we've started to eclipse the type of auto manufacturer participation that used to be at the New York Auto Show and the Chicago Auto Show. Like we're outgrowing those. And I just think that people love to experience this type of technology in this type of format, in an outdoor open air festival format where a family can come out, have fun, don't feel any sales pressure, just come out and experience this new technology. And I always tell people, like, you know, I'm a car guy. So I always felt like if you couldn't hear it or smell it, you'd never get me behind the wheel of it. I think that, like, you know, you were talking to Bruce Myers earlier, like he's a legend. And I grew up around, you know, Bruce and Barry Maguire and that whole car culture. And I really have my mind made up about electric cars before I had even driven one. The other flip side of that is that, you know, unfortunately, the industry has been politicized for a decade. And that's really alienated half of the population to really even embrace the idea of electrification. So the interesting thing is that over the last 12 months or so, we've started to see new psychographics and demographics come into our festival, and people that, you know, would never have embraced electrification, they're actually now a little bit more curious than they were. I think a lot of that has to do with the new administration, as well as Elon and what he's done over the last year or so. And so we're getting a whole new wave of consumer coming to really check out what this whole electric thing is all about. And what I tell people is, like, look, Electrify Expo isn't here to tell people to go electric. All we do is provide 1 million square feet of experiences for allow you to come in, experience the technology, and see if it's right for you. And so far, it's amazing to see all the light bulb moments that people are having at Electrify Expo. They're unlearning a lot of things that they thought they knew about electric cars that are actually is either misinformation or outdated information. And they're looking at these vehicles as more of a practical form of transportation instead of a virtue signal or a sustainability or a climate change play, because that's not what they are.
Yeah, exactly. You can actually, it costs less to operate an electric vehicle than it does a gas vehicle for one thing. I have two of them in my driveway. I plug them in the driveway overnight. They charge by solar panels on the roof of my house. I assume that you, all that stuff, people will get a chance to see, because they can get down there and they can actually take test drives in some of these electric cars and the bicycles and the scooters and everything, right? Test drives are available there at the show, right?
Yeah, you're not looking at anything behind a velvet rope. You're immersed in it. You're getting behind the wheel of it. You're sitting on the seat of it. You're hopping on a board. There's an experience and a zone, a demo zone for everything. And that's the whole point. You can't produce this type of environment inside the boxed walls of a convention center. So, this is really a new format that, people can come out, make a great day of it and have a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And what does it cost? I'm sorry, Michelle, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. I was just going to say the a lot of people, especially new, people that are newly interested, this will probably be their first time they've ever been in an electric car.
Yeah. 80% of the people that come to our festivals, this is their very first experience with anything electric. So these are all new shoppers. So, we do get some of the people who are looking for their next EV, but for the most part, this festival is really geared to people who have never experienced anything electric before.
Do you think that interest in this, given the last couple of weeks, there has been a lot going on here in the United States. I don't know if you've been reading newspapers or anything, with the president recommending people buy a Tesla to the president, threatening to cut funding to any of Elon Musk's enterprises. There's a lot going on. How do you think that will affect attendance there at Electrify Expo this year?
Yeah, it has been a choppy period here with the new administration. And that goes back to the issue with politicizing this from the very beginning and making a form of transportation a political leaning. That should have never happened. But the fact is that it did. And so, EVs have been more of a left-leaning form of transportation since its inception. And now with the new Trump administration, I think the thing that I love about this, and I'm all for removing mandates and removing incentives and allowing a free market to play itself out, because that's what we need to have happen in order for EVs to move from an early adoption phase and follow a technology S-curve through the early majority phase. And that's where we're going now. So I'll tell you that our events fall in blue states and red states. We just come out of Orlando and Phoenix. We had record-setting attendances this year at those two locations. So we're not seeing a slowdown from people who are interested in shopping for something electric. At the same time, we got to be real about the current climate. And it's certainly, making the EV adoption rollout a little clunkier and clumsier than it needs to be. But at the same time, I think that there's just so much to choose from nowadays, Mark. Like, it's not 3 or 4 years ago when this was a one horse race.
Right.
Nearly every auto manufacturer has something out there that's pretty compelling. And I think that the thing that people need to understand the most is that, and this is what people have to unlearn when they come to our festivals, is that these cars are charging faster, they're going farther, and they're cheaper than they ever have been. And they are now a practical form of transportation. Whereas 4 or 5 years ago, it was really hard to say that because they were pretty expensive. The range wasn't all that great. They took forever to charge. Well, now any vehicle, new vehicle EV on the lot is averaging 300 miles of range. The car I drive has 500 miles of range. It charges quick. It's a 7-passenger SUV. It takes my whole family of 5 anywhere we need to go. So there's a car or a truck out there for everybody nowadays. And so that's what they're going to see when they come to Electrify Expo in LA, is that there's just a huge swath of different offerings to go ahead and select from.
Speaking of affordability, what does it cost to get into Electrify Expo, and where can people get tickets? I assume they can also buy them at the gate, but tell us that.
Yeah, you definitely want to get them early. ElectrifyExpo.com is where you get them. Tickets start at $20. Kids 5 and under are free. So, you know, come on out, make a day of it. It's a huge festival. There's a lot to see. And, you know, really people of all ages. We have a huge kid zone for families where, you know, families can go ahead and let their kids try electric stability bikes or electric go-karts, or we even have like these mini Tesla cyber trucks and cyber quads that they can try out. Like, it's really a fun experience for people. And that's what you got to do with these types of festivals when you're experiencing a new technology. You'd make it fun, keep it loose, and allow people to experience things on their terms.
Okay, good. And my favorite part of that was always the bicycles, electric bicycles. And you talk about kids, they have bicycles that can accommodate little kids in sort of a front basket in the front of the electric bicycle. They look like a blast. Bring the family, have a good time. Go to electrifyexpo.com, and it's just down there at the very end of San Pedro on Minor Street. Take the 110 freeway to Gaffey all the way down to the end and keep going to Minor Street. You cannot miss it. Do not go off the edge. If you're down there doing a test drive, do not go off the dock into the water, because water conducts electricity. That is my free advice for anybody listening. BJ, thank you so much for coming on and telling us about the show. We wish you the best of luck, and we will see you. Maybe we'll talk to you later this year. Who knows? You have shows all over the country all year. So thanks very much, BJ, and we will talk to you later.
Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Michelle. See you soon.
All right.
Thank you. Bye. And now we are going to bring on one more person, if he is out there. One more of our dear buddies, our buddy, our friend.
Beaming down, Carl. Come on, Carl.
Beaming down from deep in the heart of Orange County. Carl, the Power Brower. Are you there, Carl?
I thought you were going to say Carl the Electric Power Brower after that last guest, but you didn't say that.
Carl hates electric cars, folks.
Carl,
we'll
Carl
go back
hybrid.
About that.
No, I call him.
And we,
I call we him did. Carl IC Hybrids.com.
Icy.
Yes.
Hybrids. No, Icy Hybrids.
We did not purposely have Carl, you know, omitted from the talk with BJ. Carl was just a little bit late getting on, and we couldn't include him in the show up until right now. So it is not a political move. We are not ostracizing him officially. We love Carl Brower and all that he does, including his magnificent car collection. So welcome, Carl.
Thank you. Yeah, it was very frustrating. I'm going to make it short because it's a radio show, but rendering a video, everything's slow on the computer. I hit the link, and there goes Chrome, and it's moving. It's little flashing over there in the sidebar on the Mac. And I'm like, come on, let's go. And it finally comes to life. And you guys are all like, all right, I'm starting the show. 3, 2, 1. It's like, oh, I'm here. But whatever.
Whatever. It's that technology.
Better
I don't understand.
Than never.
Better late than never. So we're way over time on the calendar section. But let me just throw out a couple of things for not this weekend, but next weekend. We're going to have Saturday, June 21st, there will be another Cars, Bikes, and Coffee at Honda headquarters in Torrance. I was just down there getting a tour of the place with our good buddy Carl Pulley, who seems to be everywhere all the time. He says that the museum down there, the Honda Heritage Center, just the museum alone, he says is, I think he said it was the biggest. I don't know. I don't want to misquote him. Anyway, it's a fantastic museum, and it's at 1919 Torrance Boulevard. And every several times a year, they have this big event where all people and all cars and motorcycles are welcome at the show. It's called Cars, Bikes, and Coffee. There are a lot of Hondas there, a lot of Honda motorcycles, but there are all kinds of other cars available there. It's really fun. Walk around, talk to people. Last time I was there, I met Johnny Campbell, 11-time Baja 1000 winner on Honda motorcycles. Check out HondaHeritage.com. Also, next, on June 22nd is the 50th Pomona Swap Meet at the Fairplex, 5 a.m. to 2 p.m. Fairplex Gate 17. 1801 West McKinley in Pomona. It's only $15 to get in. Come on, you got $15. It'll be fun. Get there at 5 a.m. Get all the best deals. Carl has been there, and he knows. He can vouch for it. Right, Carl?
It is a great way to sell things, especially if you've realized the fee nightmare that has become eBay, which used to be my go-to. And now it's like, yeah, I'm not giving you guys that many fees. You're not taking that much of my profit anymore. So now it's the Pomona swap meet for me. Woohoo!
All swap right. meet, baby.
What are you going to sell this year?
And just to clear up something that I think I might have said 2 or 3 weeks ago, maybe longer, there is nothing going on at Auto Conduct that I know of in LA, so don't go there. However, there is another motorcycle show called the Born Free Motorcycle Show, June 21st and 22nd. It's the 16th annual Born Free Motorcycle Show in Silverado Canyon, California, and that is looking like a lot of fun. We'll have more about that next week, I think. 16th annual Born Free Motorcycle Show, Silverado Canyon, California, June 21st and 22nd. Oh, and also the Celebration of Life for Gene Winfield is taking place June 28th. Save the date for that. Gene Winfield, of course, was a great customizer. He chopped the tops off of more 49 to 51 Mercuries than anybody ever. And his life will be celebrated there at the Estrella Warbirds Museum in Paso Robles, California, June 28th from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. And we'll keep you updated on that. And also one more thing, Toyota Fest, June 28th at Marina Green Park in Long Beach, California. Go to toyotaclub.org. Now we are, how many minutes? We're almost like 7 minutes into the news section. Who wants to, anybody got any news? Carl, you got any news? I have a bunch of stuff here. Michelle, you're welcome too.
Yeah, I can tell you that we just did our latest study for IC Cars. We're, of course, always looking at used car prices. And for 3 months in a row now, guys, used car prices have been going up. So we're back on the upswing there. I attribute it to a combination of used cars are formerly new cars. And 2 to 4 years ago, as you know, we didn't have a lot of new cars being made. There was a constriction as plants were shut down. So what should be 2 to 4 year old cars right now don't exist as much. And you have people buying their cars off lease for the same reason. They look around at what their next lease fee is going to be, or they look at replacing their leased 3 year old car with a new one and they're like, what the heck? And they buy their leased vehicle instead, further constricting the used car supply because a lot of used cars come out of the lease world. So, anyways, we've got upswings on used car pricing. There's a full study at IC Cars. But and then just to keep things interesting and in the political way that you like, Mark, there's one exception to the rule of the type of cars that are still going down in value. I'm gonna give you 3 guesses, but you only need one.
EV. Does it start with T and end in Tesla?
There you go. EVs in general, but when we look at the top 20 models that have lost the most value over the last year, number one, Model S, number two, Model Y, number five, Model 3, number 10, Model X. So all four Teslas are in the top 10, and the one number one and two slot are both Teslas in the 20 cars that have lost the most value over the past year.
How is that, do you think, is that just because of the things that Elon has said and done over the last year?
I would say totally, guesstimating here using my analytical skills, I would say it's like probably like 60, 40, 70, 30. I think, you know, the third most car with the biggest loss is the Porsche Taycan. And there's a couple other EVs in here too. So EVs in general, they're actually finally starting to stabilize. They were losing like 30%+ per year. And now they're down this past month. They were down 8.8%. But this is when every other car now is going up. So it's like, okay. So I think EVs are having trouble, and EVs that say Tesla on them are having more trouble because of the Tesla leader's political visibility in the last 6 months.
That is well said. That is very well said. The Tesla leader's political visibility.
Visibility. I love it. Now, Carl, is your study just American based, or is that worldwide?
Just U.S. Yeah, that's U.S. market only.
I think you'd find a larger dip in EV sales if you go worldwide. Is that right?
We definitely have heard that there has been a slowdown in the adoption rate in Europe, and I think even in China, which of course is supposed to be EV central and everyone there is supposed to love EVs. But absolutely, there seems to have been kind of a plateauing of the growth curve that everyone was so anxiously awaiting and predicting.
Hmm. Another thing is, did you see the item on Porsche? Even though the Taycan has been tanking, I'm trying to think of a creative way to say Taycan tanking. But they're going to take the Boxster and the Cayman now into EV world in a couple years.
I mean, just like, remember how many last versions of like the Durango Hellcat have we hit now, you know, and it's like the automotive version of the Rolling Stones farewell tour number 7. So I think Porsche will undeniably sell even more, and dealers will charge even higher over MSRP. They already charge over MSRP for Boxsters and Caymans, and they'll charge even more for the next 4 months until they supposedly stop making them in September. I will be shocked if, no pun intended, I will be shocked if there's only if there are no more internal combustion mid-engine Porsches in a year from now. There may not be any in December to order, but why do I feel like there'll be an announcement in March? Well, you know, due to market conditions and with some further study, we're going to go ahead and reintroduce the Boxster and the Cayman. So you get these automakers have figured this out, guys. They get all the run up to them going away, and then they get the run up when they get introduced again. It's like you just can't you win coming and going as the automaker. So yeah, that's what I predict.
Well, yeah. I just before the show, just for this recording, I was doing a story on GM investing $4 billion in U.S. plants to build gas-powered SUVs. And a few weeks before that, they invested almost $1 billion in a plant that would build gasoline-powered V8s. And so that is just GM. Every manufacturer seems to be pulling back on this. I think they blindly went into it thinking this is the transition from internal combustion to electric. This is the point in that we are, and the future says this, we must invest in electric. And they did, and they made a lot of electric cars. It was a great time to be in the market for one, but it's looking like they're going to be at least plug-in hybrid electric vehicles, maybe just hybrids, maybe just a lot of internal combustion. Take it, Carl. You have lots to say on that.
Let's go roll some coal, Mark. Come on, we got to go roll some coal. I am a huge fan of plug-in hybrids, and I wasn't always. I used to think, you know, oh, you got multiple drivetrains, it's weight, it's complexity. Well, that was all true 10 years ago. But, you know this, Mark, I think you've driven one, but the McLaren Artura is my favorite example, where you have a dinner plate-sized motor in this otherwise high-performance, exotic, mid-engine sports car that hardly adds any weight to the entire experience, and yet you get all this torque coming out of corners. Now that car is designed more for performance, obviously, than fuel efficiency, but the same concept holds true on one of my favorite cars. Again, I can't believe these words are coming out of my mouth, but the Toyota Prius. Like, the Toyota Prius is one of the most tempting cars right now for me to buy on the new car market. I keep thinking about it. And a lot of my friends have, you know, stopped taking my calls and emails since I told them this, but
the whole world's upside down.
But seriously, $34,000, you get a car that gets 30 plus miles on pure electricity, and then it gets 56 miles per gallon after that. 34.
Right.
Why isn't everyone buying? And by the way, exactly, it looks really good and it drives really good. It's way quicker than it used to be. It looks way better. And it's got, like, you know, kind of steering feel and sort of engaging driving in it. There is no arguing that the Prius and the Prius Prime is a fabulous car. There is no arguing that at all.
This is coming from the guy who so famously in our little community had a lease deal on a Fiat 500e at, what were you paying, $68 a month, Carl, for that thing?
$49 a month.
$49 a month. So if Carl says to buy a Prius, I think America, go buy Prii.
Yeah, I got to say, when I had a Prii, I got 50 miles to the gallon and I wasn't even trying.
Yeah. And don't forget, as Toyota rightfully points out, you know, especially when they're getting picketed by like, you know, where's your EVs by all the various people who say that. And their response is,
the various.
If we're selling, yeah, see how I phrase things creatively, Mark? If they're selling hundreds of thousands of hybrids and plug-in hybrids that are running either on pure electricity for big chunks of time or a high combination of electricity and internal combustion and getting way better mileage, they're doing more to save the planet than than Tesla or than Rivian, because they're selling way more vehicles and they're covering way more miles through way more consumers than any of these pure EV companies or pure EV models from other companies.
Right.
So as I like to say, the best diet is the one you can maintain. The best workout regimen is the one you can maintain. The best climate saving car is the one you can sell to more than 7% of the population.
Right. And Toyota's been doing these hybrids for the longest time, and they've really got this dialed in by now.
Yes.
Hybrids are the perhaps, maybe, if not the way of the long future, long distance future, maybe the interim future. Plug-in hybrids seem to make sense. But I think electric cars are still important, and I am enjoying mine, and we'll just leave it at that.
And I just got out of my Rivian loan today, actually. So I had an EV all week. Yeah.
Oh, well. Good. So we're talking about your car next week, though, right, Michelle?
We can do it next week. Yes, that's fine.
We can do it this week or next week, whatever you want. Let's see how much time we have. I have a couple of more news items here. Very interesting time down in Baja last week, and the SCORE Baja 500 was won by a Mexican racer, a guy who lives in Ensenada. Alan Ampudia of Ensenada won the 500. He is one of three Mexican drivers now to have won the 500 alongside Carlos Abdale Lopez from Tecate and Gustavo Tavo, his nickname, Vildasola Jr. of Mexicali. So good for them down there. A Mexican racer wins the Mexican race. Ampudia joined an exclusive list of racers who have won overall victories in the Baja Triple Crown, they say. That's the 1,000, the 500, and the 250. Those were the three races that have been going on the longest down in Baja. Now they have a new race, relatively new. I think it's 6 years old, the Baja 400. But he just won. Ampudia just won this and joined a very exclusive club. You've got racers like Ivan Stewart, Rob McCachran, Robbie Gordon, Larry Ragland, David Ashley have all won the Triple Crown of Baja. So congratulations to him for winning that. Next race is the Baja 400. And I don't know the date on that, but the 1000 is coming up in November. So get your visas, plan your trips down there. And we also have an update on that Michael Jordan NASCAR case. The Court of Appeals vacated, Michelle, tell me if I'm reading this right, U.S. Court of Appeals vacated the injunction requiring NASCAR to treat 2311 or 23XI Racing.
It's 23XI.
23XI Racing Front Row Motorsports as chartered organizations for the 2025 season.
Yeah, correct.
Is that a surprise to you, Michelle?
Actually, it was. I really thought that they were going to stick with it and keep that in place throughout the entire season. I mean, the season just basically is in the middle right now. This is really a shock that the Court of Appeals completely gutted the injunction. Does it mean the case is over? No, not at all. This is just part of the case to hold everything as it was supposed to start the season all the way through the end of the season, then have the trial, if they want to have a trial, if they haven't settled by then. But this was a shock.
It was indeed. The teams have 14 days to ask for a rehearing by the three-judge panel or for all for the appeal court judges to hear the case.
Yeah. eight, usually
7 days. Yes, Michelle.
Sorry, I was going to say this. I don't know who wrote this, but
this was, I think, Reuters or no, Fox Sports. Fox Sports.
And see, they don't talk to lawyers. They publish this stuff and they don't.
That's why we have you here, Michelle.
The 3-judge panel. This is like putting stuff in that's wrong about a transmission. So, like, you guys would be like, no, that's not correct. So
that would be the exact tone we would use too.
The 3-judge panel is what already heard it. So when you appeal, you're going to ask for an entire appeal panel to hear it, not just 3. You're going to get 7. So there you go.
Where do they appeal? What court, then?
The same. U.S. Court of Appeals. Oh. No, the U.S. Court of Appeals. Okay. They're going to ask for a rehearing. A rehearing is just they're going to present the same arguments, only to a larger panel, to be able to sway one or two of them to keep the injunction in place. Okay, go ahead. Now that I've corrected it.
Okay, well, good. That's all I got, man. I lifted it from Fox Sports because I wanted to know. I know that there was a ruling a few days ago on it, and I just, since we've talked about it, I think we should keep people informed. So it's by no means settled, right?
No, it's not. But this does mean for those two teams, for Front Row Motorsports and 23XI, they're going to lose a lot of money because first of all, they could get DQ'd. So when you're a sponsor and you see that there's a potential for a DQ because you're an open team now and you're not chartered anymore, they're going to lose sponsors, number one. And number two, they are making less money as open teams just going into the whole game plan. They get more money at being a chartered team. So this is not good for them. And so they're going to throw the spaghetti at the wall with the larger panel, see if that works. If it doesn't, then they could appeal to a higher court.
All right. And I boldly predict that if they do not win this, that they're going to, this is just me speculating, wildly speculating on my own. I don't know anything beyond this information we have, but I bet you they would just drop out of racing because you're making a third as much money as the teams that are not in your situation. And, it is ultimately about making money, right?
Yeah, it's a business decision. It's like, well, okay, we're packing up. Yeah, you could definitely see that if they don't get any traction on this injunction to keep everything in place pending a trial.
Okay. All right, good. All right, now we move quickly on to the next set because we had those two great interviews at the beginning of the hour, so we're a few minutes behind, not too many minutes. First of all, we're now in the reviews section of the car show. And I want to start out with a quick review of a show that I went to at the Peterson called Dolce e Veloce, which I think means fast and sweet. If my Italian is anywhere near correct, I am not sure. But I participated in that show myself. There were car show listeners there to whom I said hello. And if you're listening, hello back at you. It's nice to see you guys out there. Always nice to run into those guys. It was a car show for Italian cars. Now, a little bit of background. They used to have a show called the Enzo Cruise-In for Ferraris. And that they had a tiff, the Enzo Cruise, the Ferrari Club thought that they should have gotten free admission, should have gotten all kinds of other stuff. Peterson said, And so they went back and forth. So the Ferrari Club went off and did Concorso Ferrari on a month or two ago on Colorado Boulevard in Pasadena. And the Peterson brought in the same guys who have done so far 2 Macanissima shows just for Italian cars and motorcycles. And those guys came in and they did a great job. They just had all kinds of, I think, 170 cars, 1,500 people. There was room to move around. The cars weren't all packed in. It was just lovely. And they had a DJ. They had a pizza oven there, for goodness sake. That's just a quick review of that show. I really liked it. We are keeping an eyeball on the Brad Pitt F1 movie. We are hoping that it is not as dumb as it looks in the 3 trailers that they have released so far. I saw a little bit more of it. I don't think it was a trailer. I think it was a clip. They call it a clip. And that sounded like maybe it made a little bit more sense. We are hoping, and I'm hoping I get an early review of it so I can tell you whether it's worth going to see or not. Yeah. Okay, moving on. This is a review section, so I'm quickly going to review my other car that I have sitting outside right now, the Mercedes E450 all-terrain. It is, in fact, a station wagon. Whoever, I did not grow up in station wagons. When I was a kid, we had vans.
I did.
Michelle did.
Well, yeah.
Carl?
Station wagons.
Station wagons. We didn't have station wagons. We had vans. And no, I mean, I guess there were seatbelts there. Nobody wore seatbelts. We were all laid out on a wooden shelf in the back of the van. You go around a corner, all the kids pile up on one side. God forbid there had been a front collision because we would have. Anyway.
Yeah.
So station wagons. It's so easy to stray here. This is the Mercedes E450. It is based on the E-Class sedan, which is a wonderful thing to start with. It is called an all-terrain. It has all-wheel drive. It was powered by a direct injection turbocharged 3-liter straight six mated to a 9-speed G-tronic automatic. I enjoyed driving this, just getting the feel for a wagon and being in a wagon and doing practical things with a wagon was a refreshing change, let's say. It has cargo in the back. If you have the back seat up, it is 33 cubic feet of cargo. If you have the back seat, the second row seat backs down, you get 65 cubic feet of cargo. It still manages to get 25 mpg. It has, in fact, a mild hybrid. We were just talking about hybrids a little bit earlier. So it has one of those. They used to, on some cars, they call them the pancake motor because it fits between the engine and the transmission. But this is more like a dog dish. it just sits there. I looked at diagrams of it. I did not take the transmission out and look at it. But diagrams of it show a large, how would you describe it? Anyway, it's an electric motor, and it helps get you off the line. And in fact, this car, this station wagon, which weighs 4,575 pounds, gets from 0 to 60 in 4.6 seconds. And for a car this large and this heavy and this practical, that's a good time. Now, you're asking, what the heck does that cost? Well, it starts $77,250. It goes up to about $80,790. So it is not the affordable family car that your family had, Michelle, and yours, Carl. Those were, I'm guessing, Buicks or Oldsmobiles. Would I be right?
Ours was a Corvair.
The Corvair. This explains a lot.
Yeah.
Carl, what is yours?
First, it was a... I think it was called the Mercury Meteor that my dad actually went to Canada to get because he wanted a manual shift station wagon, and he had to go to Canada to get one. I was a 71. And then it was a 76 Plymouth Grand Fury Sport Suburban, basically the station wagon version of a lot of cop cars out there that you see getting smashed up in the Blues Brothers.
Was that Grand or Grand with a D?
I think that Plymouth Grand Fury.
Grand Fury, okay.
Yeah.
It wasn't Grand just the regular Fury. It was the Grand
Fury. It was a Grand Fury. Wow. I remember it had the longest name. The script was on the door panels, and as a little kid, it just was like there were just all these words on the door. But now I remember
there
the words.
There were a lot of names back in those days. They were on every panel you looked on had a different name, was not the same as
so
the other
funny.
Ones. It's like they got paid by the... I don't know. Somebody had to think those up. So anyway, this one, the Mercedes E450 all-terrain, as they're calling it, it is raised up a little bit. I was unable to determine exactly how much it is raised up, but it has 7 inches of ground clearance. They are kind of trying to tell you that it's a sort of a crossover-y kind of thing. It is not. Uh-uh. There is no way I would at all feel comfortable taking this off, even on a dirt road, certainly not with the family in it. But they are presenting it that way. It does have all-wheel drive. It has a self-leveling aromatic adaptive damping system it can raise itself up and down depending on that. Is mostly just load dependent. So if you put a bunch of weight in it, then it raises the ride height back up to probably 7 inches of ground clearance. So mine is in Patagonia red. I rather fancied it. I've had it a week and I enjoyed the week. So there you go. I'm just throwing that out there. And does it mean that station wagons are coming back? No.
because I think the only station wagons you can get are priced about in this class. Mm-hmm. Audi makes one. Mercedes makes one.
Don't forget Volvo.
Volvo. Well, what about that BMW M5? That's a pricey one, too.
That's one that I had, and did we review it here? I had it a couple of weeks ago. The M5 is far more performance-oriented. This is not...
Yeah, you reviewed it.
Yeah, okay. This one is not trying to be a street performance. It's trying to fake it like it could go off-road. And, you know, like I said, I wouldn't take it off-road. I mean, if I'm going to take something off-road, I want to get at least some kind of AT tire, maybe an MT, maybe an RT, just something other than an M&S tire to go off-road.
Yeah, but, well, maybe off-road to them is driving up a gravel driveway on a country estate.
I think for the most part, this is made, since it's all-wheel drive, I think it's made for driving in snow. I think, you know, if you live on the East Coast, upper in the Northeast or something where there's a lot of snow, you know, there are a lot of Mercedes owners out there. So maybe that's who this is aimed at. However, if you were here in Southern California, you know, like I said, I would be perfectly happy having this. It would be a great family wagon, but $77,000 is not in the Vaughn family budget. But what is maybe Carl will tell us. Carl drove a couple of very interesting cars, also from a German manufacturer. What were they, Carl?
Yeah, so I was in Aspen last week, and I drove the all-new 2025 Audi A5 and S5, the performance version of the A5 being the S5 sedan. And then I drove the Audi Q5 and SQ5, the midsize or compact SUV, depending on how you want to look at it, but basically the X3 competitor and the Macan competitor. I'm pretty sure the Macan and the Q5 share a platform, actually. And I can't quite talk about the A5 S5 yet because that embargo is still this upcoming week, but we just crossed the Q5 and SQ5 embargo, so this is hot off the presses. And the Q5 is the best-selling car that Audi produces. It's their bread and butter, pay the bills car. And so it's always tricky when an automaker redesigns that. They can't change it so much they alienate their existing base, but they can't leave it so unimproved that people start running to the competitors because they're more interesting. And I have to say, I think Audi nailed this one. It looks like the previous A5, but not quite. It looks better. It drives like the previous one, but not quite. It drives better. It's got more power. They swapped out the standard turbos for the standard twin scroll turbos for variable vane or variable geometry turbos, which basically means that it's got a wider power band. And peak power's up too. The non-performance one, the Q5, makes 268 horse, 295 pound-feet, 0 to 60 in 5.8 seconds. And the SQ5 performance one, that goes from a 4-cylinder to a 6-cylinder, from a 2-liter to a 3-liter engine, 362 horsepower, 406 pound-feet, 0 to 60 in 4.6 seconds. Sound familiar, Mark? It's about the same as that wagon that you were driving, Paul.
Indeed, yes.
And they both, and by the way, you said that one started around 77. You can get this SQ5 starts at 64.8, and the all-out Prestige one, which is loaded with a lot of great features, 71.3. But I definitely want to cover, and by the way, the non-performance one starts at 52 for just the regular Q5, 52, 53 with the delivery, and it tops out around 62 and for the top Prestige trim. But I want to touch on what you touched on, because they had a Porsche. We're up in Aspen is where we started, Colorado, and we drove around up there. And they sent us on an off-road course in the Q5, and it was basically a fire road section going over these mountain passes. And it was very obvious the car really shouldn't be doing that. You know, it's 20-inch wheels. They gave us a top trim one, which means it's got 20-inch wheels and run flat tires. And you know what that kind of combination means when you try to go off-road. You know, there's
cannibalism.
No give. Yeah,
cannibalism.
Yeah.
You're stuck up there, and you have to eat the partner. And this is a problem, Carl, for you, because you are so fit. You have a low percentage of body fat. You would be the first one eaten. Keep that in mind, Audi buyers. Keep that
in mind. Well, I was a little worried when I saw that they'd loaded a bunch of soccer team people into one of the other ones. But anyways, we didn't get stuck up there, thankfully. But we did prove that when you have a 20-inch wheel with run flat tires that are not off-road tires, you really don't want to go over washboards or anything else. And again, this was a fire road. I don't know what would happen if you tried to, like, you know, climb up a rock or something like that. You'd break something.
And that's true with so many of these cars that they advertise in the ads. They show them, you know, going off in the middle of the nowhere and right. camping in the wilderness, surrounded by chirping birds and all this stuff. But the fact of the matter is, with those wheels and probably the tires, which are, I'm guessing, sort of a summery performance-y tire, those things yes. would not last mm-hmm. out there. And the first sharp rock that you hit, you know, it, like I say, cannibalism. Deal with it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, and it has an off-road setting, too. You know, it's got balanced, it's got comfort, it's got dynamic. Those all make sense for the car. And then it had an off-road setting, and I'm just like, yeah, okay. So, look, it's the same thing with the Mercedes. It's the same thing with all these cars. You know, they want people to think, I could go off-road if I want to, and they hope they never do. The manufacturer's like, yeah, you could, but you're probably not gonna, right? No, probably not. Okay, yeah, then you can buy this, you know. So, but... On the plus side, the car, like I said, it's really well executed, plush interior, typical Audi, beautiful three screens on the top trim. So you got the 11.9-inch gauge cluster, the virtual cockpit, as Audi calls it, because it's so customizable what you can show on it. 14.5-inch central touchscreen, and a optional, but it's standard on the top prestige trim, 10.9-inch passenger dedicated. You know, you guys have seen this. They're starting to do this passenger dedicated yeah. screen on the right. on the passenger side of the gauge, right. or on the passenger side of the dash. So a lot of technology, and probably the best heads-up display I have seen in any car so far. Just a crazy multicolor detailed. It was like, okay, there's really four screens in this car. And there's
was
this
distraction?
No, it wasn't. It was really informative. And there's this recreated, like, road, you know, you see this on a lot of cars now, electric cars and the more advanced cars, where they're kind of doing their self-driving or semi-autonomous driving stuff. And you see the lane that the car's in around it on the instrument cluster, and you see the cars that's passing. It actually represents the cars. The LiDAR can kind of make up difference between a truck and a. It does this on the Audi one in the virtual cockpit, and it does it in the head-up display. The head-up display had the little diagram of like your car on the road and the surrounding road and the surrounding cars. It was really cool.
That's so impressive. I'm impressed that you were impressed with it. So good for you.
Yeah, I'm a tech guy, and I was like, this thing's cool. So I think Audi nailed it. The car is enough better that people who already own one would be like, oh, this one's cool. I want to buy it. And nobody who likes the current one's going to run away from it. It's still very similar.
Well, my Mercedes also had that what would you call a cross dash wide screen
which
cluster a separate screen just for the passenger, and the passenger could watch YouTube videos or whatever that I could not see from my driving position.
Same with Audi. Yeah, they use that shutter technology back. So you can't see the screen from the driver's side. Yep.
Question for both of you. On
have
a back
30 seconds left, Michelle.
Oh no. Okay. I was gonna say, in the back seats of either of your testers, did they have a screen for the passengers in the back?
No, but they had climate controls back there.
Oh. In the Maybach that I had the week before, they did have that. So right. We'll talk about the Maybach maybe later. And next week, we'll talk about Michelle's Rivian experience. It was riveting, I hear. Stick around and for a Rhapsody in Black, music that sounds great on your car stereo. That's put on by Jim Dawson, Ray Regalado, and a bunch of other guys. And we will see you next week here on The Car Show.
KPFK will be starting a brand new morning lineup this coming Monday, June the 16th. It starts at 6 a.m. with the KPFK debut of the QR code with hosts Q Ward and Ramses Ja. Democracy Now! Will be heard from 7 to 8 a.m. and Law and Disorder with host Kat Brooks will broadcast from 8 to 9 a.m. The 9 and 10 o'clock hours will continue to air The Tom Hartman Show and Letters and Politics with Mitch Jeserich, respectively. You're invited to tune in Monday, June 16th for a new morning lineup on KPFK, 90.7 FM Los Angeles, and online at kpfk.org.
Support comes from Wilgear Theatricum Botanicum, presenting outdoor repertory theater, events, and educational programs for all ages this June through October 2025. Shakespeare's A Midsummer Night's Dream is back, along with Much Ado About Nothing, Strife, The Seagull Malibu, Wine in the Wilderness, and a world premiere, Echoes of the New World. The Theatricum is located in the heart of Topanga Canyon, just off the 101 freeway. Explore and picnic in the gardens before the show. Further information is available at www.theatricum.com and kpfk.org.